It's time for First Voices Radio with Teal'c'Kissin' Ghost Horse. Please stay tuned.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Joshua.
Washtelo, chante washtea na pe chi huzapielo, le unkibiki he washtelo. Greetings and good day and welcome, my relatives. I shake your hands with good feelings in my heart. And it's a good day for all of us to be here. It really is. In addition to relativity, this is First Voices Radio. And I send you greetings and strength from the east gate of Turtle Island, where the sun and the water touched the earth at once. I'm your host, Teal'c'Kissin' Ghost Horse, and this is an all-native hosted and all-native produced First Voices Radio. And Liz Hill is a producer of First Voices Radio. And you can hear us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Spotify, as well as firstvoicesindigenousradio.org for archiving, downloading, and listening.
The dark and distant drumming, the pounding of the hooves, the silence of everything that moves. Late at night you see them, decked out in shiny jewels, the coming of the caravan of fools. Like the wings of a dove, the waiter's white glove seems to shimmer by the light of the pool. Some dull, blinding winter, when you can't help but lose, you're running with the caravan of fools. Love and devotion, deep as any ocean, don't play by anybody's rules. With your carousel of horses and your unforeseen forces, you're running with the caravan of fools. Caravan of fools. Caravan of fools. You're running with the caravan of fools.
Yeah, and that was the legendary John Prine with Caravan of Fools. And now, First Voices Radio. I'm your host, Teal'c'Kissin' Ghost Horse, and I'd like to personally thank you for staying with us on this radio program, First Voices Radio, as we remember the late Dakota activist, spoken word poet, John Trudell, who left us in 2015. And I'd like to say that in my time on the radio and within the radio, moving up and sideways and up the ranks, if that's what it's called, is in my time of being a student of America, a student in this educational process, I learned a lot of things from this uncle, Lexi John Trudell, and a lot of things were brought to the simple fact that things needed to be simplified in order to understand it. And when we get too lost into the, I'd say, the lost meanings of this language called English, then, you know, we spend our lives searching for who we are. And so when I'm bringing these news, these interviews, and these views, actually, of Native people, we are the community. And as an Indigenous person, it's a little different for us. It is, you can have your fun, but when it comes to Native people, where's that heart for what has gone on with the land? So I'm thinking, you know, this one introduction that I have is I'd opened up for John Trudell several times in Washington, University of Washington, in New York City, and out throughout the West in those times that he was with us before he left us in 2015. Although his remarks are from 1980, I'm always amazed at how his observations have stood the test of time and still resonate today. And the names of these U.S. politicians that John mentions have changed over the years, but the issues actually are the same that face us then as Indigenous peoples. And John Trudell has been identified as a poet, a fighter, an Indigenous rights activist, agitator, and many other things. But if you were to have asked him which of these descriptions best suited him, he would have refused to be pinned down. John said, "Actually, I don't consider myself to be any of those things. There are things that I do, but there are parts of me. They're not the total." And John Trudell was a complex sum of all that he saw, endured, and accomplished in his 69 years, a time which he experienced more than most people might have in several lifetimes. So more information about John Trudell can be found at johntrudell.com. So go there and listen, and our guest for this next...
You're never gonna get my love, know, 30 years ago, I went through a process with some elders and received a name. Res Mamenachem means he who causes to rise in the alignment of truth using the foundation of his people. So that is both my name and what I'm supposed to do. And before that, when my elders gave me my name, as soon as they said Resma, my whole body relaxed. It was like, that's me, right? And my family had a hard time with it, brother. My family had a hard time with me getting the name, because even when something brutalizes us, if we know it for a long period of time, it feels like a blanket. It feels like a blanket of security. And so when I said to my dad, I said, you know, I took a new name. Here's my name. He said, you a Mason. Do you know what being a Mason is? And this is his voice when he's saying it. And I said, yeah, it's the name that my ancestors, the last plantation that my ancestors were on. He looked at me and he dropped his shoulders. He goes, I'm gonna need to work on this. I said, yeah. And so I think our role, brother, is to be clear. I think our people's role is to be clear about the essence of who we are, and clear about the boundaries, and clear about what has happened, and clear about the need of reclaiming. I think what we bring to the world is a clarity that says, yes, you are not and never have been defective. You are not to be compared to white folks or white bodies. They are not the standard of humanness. But what that means is that you must now excavate, reclaim, and reimagine what that means for you, yourself right now, and your people coming forward, right? That is what I think we have to offer. In terms of being a messenger, brother, I think what we have to do is we have to take those roles seriously of our peoples, and let our people know that our peoples must take that role seriously, because if we don't, this world will not survive. This is not just about our peoples not surviving. The very essence of where we came from, the very soil that goes between our toes, will not survive on the current trajectory. So I think our clarity is what we have to do now, is what we have to bring now.
That's so true. When I think about, because I often say the earth doesn't lie. So where is our thoughts originally stemming from? Are we some offshoot of some errant messenger that has to go into the head rather than staying with the heart? And the whole earth will reclaim us eventually anyway. So where are we becoming from? You know, gravity is rule. Gravity rules, right?
That's right.
And so when we're trying to lift off and go everywhere, but here it's that the clarity that you talk about is coming from the fact that the earth does not lie. And where are our languages? Where are our allegiances from?
That's it. Where are our language? Where is it from? And be serious about that it is tied to the rhythms of creation itself, which means that I don't need to go to anybody else but that. And I must condition and temper my body to be able to receive that. Mm-hmm. I don't have to go through you. You are not the arbiter of what is and is not. You are not. That my very body is both a receiver and an amplifier. The literal construction of, think about this, brother, the literal construction of our bodies both receives vibes and vibrations and amplify, like the bell of the head and then the bowl through that. When me and you were talking and I hear you go, You don't have to say, Resma, I really agree with the technique that you're talking about and the reality of the spring theory and all. You ain't got to do all that. When you go, right? And you close your eyes, or I go, right? That's vibratory. That is a amplifier and a receiver, because that thing that we're grunting on is true in its essence. And the language, me and you don't even have to speak the same language, brother, but when you go, I go, You know what I mean?
That's so true. I don't know what to say. I can't say nothing else. That's just what it is, how it is, right? So, you know, when I talk about the messenger and the origin of who we are, the real origin, and calling us to become free again, so to speak, that the earth is always asking us and now really telling us because of what's going on in the world. But with her, I think, and this may seem a little egotistical, but I think part of it is to show them how to make the journey, not to some happy human state, but to something far vaster. And here's the thing, here's the catch, the natural human.
And that is halfway through an interview I'm doing with Rezma Manekam, who is the author of My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Our Bodies. And so we're going to take a little break from that. We're going to come back to First Voices Radio in a bit so you can think about what it is that we are talking about is to become a human being. Listening to First Voices Radio. My name is Teokasin Ghost Horse, and that was John Nemeth from the album Stronger Than Strong. Come and take it. We're going to continue with Rezma Manekam on First Voices Radio, and we're talking about the human being and very engaging conversation I had with Rezma.
The natural human. To be the natural human.
Yeah. Brother, this is the only thing that I have that in terms of our vibe, the only thing that I want to push back on with gentleness a little bit, okay? I don't think it is our role to teach them. I think it's our role to be all that we can be, and hopefully they will recognize the beauty of it and figure out how to develop it for themselves. I think the European brutality, what I call the Euroviolence, has been so replete among them that collectively, they're going to have to learn to just stop, pause, and slow down. Not in a yoga sense, not in a bypassing sense, but slow down collectively. and began to work with all of the grief and pain and brutality and terror that they never dealt with. And what we can do as peoples, as indigenous peoples, because they have indigeneity too, right? It just got stomped, it got obliterated. That what we can do as bodies of culture and peoples of culture, what we can do is we can say, we're here, we're around you, but we ain't doing the work. We are here, we're around you, and y'all got some things you're gonna have to lean into. And you could either do it or you ain't. But you ain't stopping us from doing what we need to do. And I am not going to deflect the learnings and the love and the things that my people need in order to come over here and try and condition you when you have not even created a container by which your conditioning can take place. So I'm not doing that until you create the container by which your conditioning can take place. I'm going to put my efforts over here where I have more of a sense of what my people can hold. I know that. I have a sense of it, and I'm going to cultivate those pieces you got to do over there that I have no interest in.
And that's where the difference between teaching and showing. Teaching is not you get this a lot from how to do something, but how do you do that? Life is not an instruction manual. It's right. Like not in my back pocket.
That's
saying, living reality rather than using reality is the big
thing. That's it. Living reality, right? Ooh, I love that. I gotta write that down.
Yeah. Because you have to experience, not experiment. I mean, there's somewhat of that, but if you're listening to those ancestors, you're talking about learning to understand the strangest prospect of all of that is, if I could say it, the death of our mortality. In other words, we have an idea that we are going to die. But my uncle would say, if you can't take it with you, then why take it now?
Right.
You know, you see where that other thinking is going, that we can take it all and that we're going to go to some heaven. That kind of is a bypass from doing what we need to do now.
That's it. And for me, brother, I think here's what's so, see, let me say this. They tried to kill this in your people. They tried to genocide this out of your people. Brother, that me and you could be sitting up here talking like this is amazing. This is how you know the great spirit or the creation. This is how you know that it is. So for me, trauma is not primary. This creation energy, this stuff, this is primary, right? The trauma stuff that energetically tries to thwart, but it's trying to thwart the creation energy. So the creation energy is actually primary. The thwarting is not primary. And one of the things that I think about, brother, is the fact that me and you are not walking down the street in our perspective places going, and that we are actually talking about how do we get our peoples to get some sense of reclamation and connection? That the fact that we're able to do this is really a testimony to creation. That enough of our ancestors' resilience got passed down to our ancestors, to our elders, to our mamas, to our daddies, and then enough of it got into us to where we can now be talking the way that we're talking. And what happens is that this gives room for that ear that has been conditioned to hear the voice within the voice, as my people would say, listening to the voice within the voice. And then these words blossom and bloom in their hearts and begins to push away any notion of fraudulence, any notion of shame, any notion of imposterness. These are the pieces that I think for us that's important for what we're doing right now is for our people to hear that this is actually possibility.
It makes me wonder how many people have turned off the radio by now. Because yeah. when they hear this, like, and how many are brave enough to stay with what we're saying is because right. a lot of people who may have turned the radio off and just doesn't want to listen to this are saying, oh, those people, they are plotting against us again.
Yeah, right.
And
right,
we're not even right. doing that. We're acknowledging who we are. And if that's right. dangerous, then that's yeah. not our problem. That's not that's our band-aid. Exactly right. That's not our band-aid.
I think about the people that have turned it off, brother, and I say, good. I say good riddance, turn it off. But that one, that two, that three, right? That don't turn it off and hold and rock while they're listening to us, that moan while they're listening to us, that grunt while they're listening to us, that are shucking peas while they're listening to us, that are burning sage while they're listening to us, that are looking out the window while they're listening to us, and they stand with it. Those are the ones that, because those are going to be the dogs for our people. Those are going to be the ones that's going to be like, give me more, give me more. So the ones that turn it off and can't take it right now, good on you. Maybe in a year from now, you'll come back and look for that, look for this, this audio, right? And say, now I'm ready. That's it.
That's the key to, and it does happen. For example, but when I was a teacher, here it is 20, 30 years later, and some of the students who are all grown up in their own families and whatnot, once in a while I get an email or run into a Facebook thing and they say, you remember when you came to our school and you said this?
Yeah.
Yes, now we know what you're saying. And one of the terms was this thing that I said way a long time ago, and who knows, maybe I heard it or read it, but I remember saying it exactly that, and because I was realizing, it's the word. There's a difference between realizing, and I said, real eyes realize real lies.
Yeah.
Real eyes realize down here to the heart.
That's right, that's right.
Real lies up to the head.
That's it.
They took it and remembered it all these times. So what you that's said it. Is, yes, what we're saying is coming from that was the past. That was the ancestor, from the ancestor. And out here is the future. We're saying this. So what do you think about this thought? Is that we say every moment is innocent, but the other world that came here has intoxicated innocence with a thing called guilt. They don't know what innocence is yet.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
I go home to the elders, they're as if they were 10 years old because yeah. they did not. They're not working their lives from guilt. We're yeah. doing the right thing so we can get to another place.
When I hear you say that, a part of me lands in this place. And that landing is a place of discernment. And what I mean by that is the thing that you landed in the young ones early on, landed as a clump. And life began to work on them in a way that they had to learn to deal with the quaking. And in learning to deal with the quaking, discernment started to show up. And what I mean by discernment is that they were able to tell this from this, the constriction and the thwarting from the resource and the true, the creation, the stable, the primordial, right? That happened. That is a process of discernment that we all must go through. So when you say that there's a level of innocence, that level of innocence is not like people think about innocence, like, you know, something that's bestowed upon you or a baby. That's one type of innocence. But the other type of innocence is directly infused with curiosity, is directly infused with this sense that I must go through something to be able to discern what from what, in order to allow room for that innocence to be birthed more. So that's the way when I think about the term innocence, I think about it as a process of discernment, a process by which at the moment that we're introduced to something that is new, different, overwhelming, it comes as a clump. Our process begin to pause long enough so those things can be quaked and moved with each other so we can begin to go, oh, that's that. And then it moves back together. And then you go, oh, that's that. And in the process of that is a tempering and conditioning process. And this is why the quiet and the pausing is so important, is because when you got too much going on, you can't tolerate this. You can't tolerate the movement of being able to hold, oh, that's that with that particular energy, that particular texture, that particular direction, that particular pressure, right? I can tolerate it long enough and watch it move back, and then move this and tolerate it long enough and watch it move back. And in that movement, something else emerges through.
You're describing perfectly how the peoples and different nations in Turtle Island dealt with each other, mm-hmm. that they would move into an area where there was a particular medicine. They always leave enough. Right.
Yeah.
Say there's 100% there, you take 10%.
Yeah.
And, you know, so on and so on. So there would be more next year.
Yeah.
And so when you were describing sort of a morphing back and forth, the next nation would come in and do that. So there was always a movement rather than this is the border and that's the border.
Yeah.
Even that relationship today, as I see it, is the Occidental world they are rutted in ownership. I think gets in the way of everything. It gets in the way, domination, everything. And they've been away from that process that you described, the morphing.
Yeah.
There's no movement, so it's stagnant. And of course, an easier thing to think, the bypassing that you talk about, is a thing called tourism.
Yeah.
So they go places to feel like they're at home. The home is, we can say easy, oh, it's inside, but it's really, if there was a border, the biggest one that we say is that there is no difference between the inside and the outside. And mm-hmm. and I think that's the separation of body and mind. Parts of our body are named after parts of nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see? And so that consciousness of nature, like the tree, is like the cha of our torso. Because of a tree. So that means there's a consciousness alive within us, because all those four elements are conscious intelligences. Consciousness, they're alive, they're aware, and that intelligence is in you. So that's why I'm saying we cannot cut that spiritual umbilical cord with the earth by going to another planet until we take care of this. And the thinking process, and I think I'm not going to give it any hope. I'm just going to look for its practicality, that there is something happening, and it seems to be this is eventually where the earth has to return to being original, original thought, original seed. And those are indigenous peoples. They speak the languages.
It's got to come back to us.
Yeah,
that's the thing. All of this, white folks can do whatever they want to do right now. This eventually has to come back to us. It has to. There's only so far. There's only so many Mars trips you can take. There's only so many trips to the moon that you can take before you either blow up what you got or slow down enough to realize that you can't keep running. You can't keep running. And you're going to have to come back to us. You're going to have to come back to the indigenous peoples, right? You're going to have to, because the ways in which you, there is a zenith to the ways in which you move. You either come back to us and come back to this on your own, or come back to us and come back to this when you've ravaged everything and sucked the marrow out of everything. And then it might be too late because y'all done so much. I was thinking about something you were saying about the body. I was thinking about, like, in the work, some of the work that I do in terms of working with people, like when I'm working with, you know, bodies of culture and the trauma stuff, that the bone, the skeletal pieces of the body, right, is actually earth. It is actually grounding. It is actually earth. So sometimes what I do with clients when they have this really airy sense of them, when I have them, I'm working with them and they have this really kind of overly airy sense of themselves. One of the things that I have them do is I find that bone right there on the wrist and I just have them just play with that. Just play. Have them find a kneecap and just play with it, right? I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have no magical answer to people. Well, what's going to happen if I do that? I don't know. Let's tap it for a couple years and see, right? Let's work with it, right? And so I think about the bone being earth, the blood being water, the air being breath, and the fire being temperate and temperature. And so many of those things are out of balance with each other. The idea of getting us to begin to slow down and sense into those pieces of earth and bone and temperate and pressure as not as an abstract tool. There's a sister that I know and love named Leticia Nieto. And she told me one time, she's a professor of social work. And she said that one of the things that used to bother her for years is that social work students, master's level social work students would come in and they would say to her in one way or another, I need you to teach me tools. I need tools. I need more tools to figure this stuff out. I need tools. And she says she never understood why in her belly that bothered her. She, you know, something about this is off. And then she said one day she was in her class and she was hearing them say that, and then the ancestors gave it to her. And they said, she said, what you want is tools, which would suggest that there's something to be fixed, that there is a correct tool for the correct job. And all I need to do is give you the correct tool, and you will be able to fix something. What I want you to begin to think about less about tools and think more about toys, which would suggest something that you explore with, something that you see if it fits. If it don't, then you try something else. There's an exploration here. So I'm not going to help you with tools. I'm going to help you with toys. And this idea of beginning to play with this stuff, not having the answer, but play with it so something can emerge, is something that the European has no collective agility with, no collective acuity with, no collective stamina around.
That's very clear to me. Yeah. My heart hears that, and my head could throw a thousand theories out there, yeah, right? Because it's been trained in the West. And I was thinking, is there really a need for theory? Because we can rationalize it and delineate into million things like creation and creative and imagination and whatever. Yeah. But is there really a word for theory? And the etymology of theory simply means show, like theater.
Show. That's it.
That's all show. It means, a show. And right. And yet there's no evidence that it will work. So working in this practical mystery that we are in.
Oh, I love that.
We're looking for, as you say, a tool. But then you go back to original peoples. Is there room for toys? I'm not taking off on the saying that you're saying, but in you go to indigenous peoples, there's not toys, but you see, when did that become something to distract children? TV has become a toy. The video games are a toy to distract you from being outside. Because we didn't have any toys growing up, by the way. We had the horses and we had the earth. And I'm thinking that these are basically the toys.
That's it. That's what I mean by toys. Yeah. That's exactly what I mean by toys. But toys, I mean exploration, to be able to hold exploration, playing, not playing in the term of frivolous nothing, right? I'm talking about playing in terms of exploration. Yeah. And that temper and that tone and that quality is missing from a lot of the stuff that we talk about, from a lot of the things that, you know, the Europeans want to tell us is standard and the correct way to do things. That idea of exploration in which you would like some white folks probably and some white affected folks of our people might be listening to this. And then they'll go, well, exploration, that's what, you know, that's what we do when we go into the world and when we try and explore different planets and stuff like that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about an exploration out there. I'm talking about an exploration in here and in here connected to this.
So, so real. And we can go out with this is that, tell me your thoughts, of course, that in the indigenous peoples all over the world and being with a lot of indigenous peoples, and I began to notice that what I didn't notice already was that, yes, we indeed in relationship have that relationship with the earth, with the wind, with the fire, with the water. But the fact that we still hold, and I wouldn't say perform, but we hold, it's like drinking water. We don't know where. It's a ceremony, but we hold ceremonies, the water, the fire, the wind, and the earth. We actually hold those ceremonies, and that's our science, so to speak. Because of our ceremonies, we're recognizing, appreciating, we're not taking, you know, into some experimental lab control, and that's yes. The difference. Our ceremonies are about recognizing and acknowledging the mystery.
Yes, and the ceremonies are not the thing itself. The ceremonies actually hold the quaking and the things and have been tempered and conditioned enough to where it can hold this stuff and hold the, that's what the ceremonies do, is they hold the energy, right? That's why the tempering is so important. And many times people will see that who don't understand what's happening, they'll see that and they'll try and duplicate it and wonder why it falls apart. Because they haven't done the work to actually condition the container. They're just doing the aesthetic stuff, but you have not done no years of conditioning.
Let's take ayahuasca, for example. They go to Peru or Bolivia, wherever, and they grab the plant and they pay a shaman, quote unquote, and the shamans are not even shamans. But the background, the backdrop, they bring back, and there's no culture to support where they took that intelligence of the plant. So they delineate it into their science of it's going to make us better, but yet it's killing a culture and it's taking away that plant intelligence from where it really belongs with the earth.
That's it.
Is there anything to rectify that except for going back to our beginning of our conversation? It's on each of us. It's on each of us peoples, our peoples, and it's facing that grief, by not projecting it to onto the black folks or onto the native folks.
That's it. We got to stop. I think for us as peoples is if people hear anything that me and you have said is this, our bodies have been where America has done all of its dirt. America created the indigenous body and the black body to handle all of that Euro-violence that they never dealt with. And they heaped it and pushed it through our bodies. What we have to do is not ingest that and do that to each other. We cannot do that to each other. And we have to stop and resist the urges to do that to each other. When I think about different things, I have never owned a Redskins jersey or like that, or a Braves jersey. I've never done that because it always felt weird to me. It always felt funny to me. What happens to you will eventually happen to me, right? It will eventually happen to me if we don't watch it. And so I think what we can begin to do is that as peoples is stop blowing the pain that was vertically blown into us and then blow it through each other horizontally. We have to stop and we have to catch ourselves in our own peoples and just stop.
So we know this. We need to, like you said, need to, but do we want to? That's the difference. And I think one thing to be sure of, that something's going to happen no matter whether we have control or whatever about it. Is like, if I was to try to solve the mystery, that would make me go crazy. But if I accept the mystery,
that's right.
Then things are so cool.
That's it. Thank you.
Wow, man. You're good.
This is beautiful.
You're good, man.
You're good, brother. We brothers. We doing this together. We are good.
Good feelings to you and your family. Thank you. It's good for you to be here. It's good to have your family. And let's do this again sometime in a circle of life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I appreciate you so much. Thank you. And we'll be talking soon.
And that was Rezma Menakem, who is the New York Times bestselling author of My Grandmother's Hands, Racialized Trauma and the Pathway to Mending Our Hearts and Bodies. You can find more about Rezma Menakem at resmaa.com. You've been listening to First Voices Radio. My name is Teokasin Ghost Horse. Thank you for joining us.
Teachers are